It's the first adult color science fiction film. It's Buck Rogers for the mature. So sit back, fasten your seatbelt, and behold...
Thursday on a special two-hour Buck Rogers, a sorcerer plots to conquer the Earth. His weapon, an army of slave women. And it's up to Buck to stop him.
I've got a reputation to uphold, too, you know.
Starring Gil Gerard with Jack Palance. And returning to action, Buster Crabbe. Buck Rogers, then. Chucky murders bring Quincy to the racetrack. Thursday.
His life support systems and returns Buck Rogers to Earth 500 years later.
All right, welcome to Buck fucking Rogers in the 25th century. I'm Diablo Frank, with he is.
My name is Buck, and I like to fuck, Mr. Fix-It.
There we go. So we're going to be covering the Buck Rogers television series from 1979, which we both grew up watching.
Yep.
Now, Mr. Fix-It, why don't you tell me a little bit about your personal experience with the show?
Miss Gray. Oh, Miss Gray, where I became a man.
Honestly, I used to get this mixed up with Battlestar Galactica when I was a kid, because they were all space shows that were coming on TV.
There's more to it than that. We'll get into that, though.
Okay, well, there was a lot of space shows that would come on, so...
When were you first exposed to the Buck Rogers show?
I want to say just it was on TV, you know, reruns.
So you didn't watch it first run?
No, I caught it on reruns.
Where did you watch those reruns?
I want to say Channel 20?
I think it was 39.
Was it 39?
I want to say 39 here in Houston.
Okay.
There's one like Saturday afternoons, I think?
No. Was it Saturday afternoon?
I think it was on the weekend, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was on the weekend. Yeah. I want to say mid-afternoon before the... Yeah, mid-afternoon. Because I remember they had like a little block of sci-fi. They'd show that. They'd show Battlestar Galactica.
I don't remember Battlestar Galactica.
I remember seeing Battlestar Galactica.
I remember seeing that. I think it was on 20, or it was on a different time. What I seem to recall was it Voyagers? The one where the guy and the kid would travel through time using a pocket watch?
I don't remember that one.
You don't remember that one?
No.
Now, I think that one, I want to say that ran at the same time as Buck Rogers on 39. But I don't remember, Battlestar Galactica, I remember being not at the same time break, but you may watch a different iteration.
Well, no, my uncles were into Battlestar. I remember we watched Battlestar Galactica because my uncle was into Battlestar Galactica. So we would watch it at, you know, he'd be watching it, so we'd watch it. And that's how I got into that. Buck Rogers, I just got into because I remember everybody liked it. It was just a cool show. Erin Gray was on it. She was amazing. So, I mean, that was kind of how I was introduced to Mr. Rogers.
Roughly how many episodes do you think you've seen? Like, do you think you've seen the majority of the series?
Well, the sad thing is I probably saw a bunch, but there's only certain episodes that are imprinted themselves on my soul. And they all seem to be Erin Gray episodes.
She's in pretty much every episode, I think.
Yeah, but the special episodes.
I know there are some special episodes.
Those special episodes. But those are the ones that really come to mind when I think about the show.
Well, you're kind of young. I don't think you were sticky just yet, but maybe a little bit later.
Pre-stick.
Yeah. So the episode we're going to be covering today is Planet of the Slave Girls. I tend to think of them as the first episodes of the TV show because I saw Buck Rogers as a movie. But
did they show those in the theater?
No. That's what I'm saying. These were, for me, the first episodes of the TV show because they just were running the movie as the first two episodes. But technically, these are episodes 3 and 4. Planet of the Slave Girls, directed by Michael Caffey, who referred to the show as Suck Rogers and made me rethink what we were going to title this podcast. I like Suck Rogers, but I don't think it'll show up in search results.
Oh, no, no.
So we're going to stick with Buck fucking Rogers instead. The story was by Steve Greenberg and Aubrey Solomon, although she wrote it under the pseudonym Corey Applebaum, because whenever she did an episode that she didn't like, she would use a pseudonym because she didn't want to be associated with it. She didn't want to mar her name on a Suck Rogers episode. This one was originally released on September the 27th, 1979. Do you want to tell folks roughly what happens in the episode?
A bunch of pilots are getting sick. The Earth Air Command, I guess, their defense force are getting sick, but it's a sickness where their motor skills are out of whack. So even if they start getting better, their motor skills are still deteriorating.
So they can't pilot their ships.
Yeah, and so they finally figured out, oh, it's something in the food. Like, we're eating these, I guess, tofu-looking tablets.
Everybody in the future is a soy boy. Yeah. I hate to break it to the MRAs out there, but they're all soy-based food products. They're food discs, and they're getting tainted somewhere along the lines.
Yes, and so they pulled on their little Magnum PI hats, and they've slowly worked it back into, well, it has to do with the food, and it has to come from this certain planet, because that's where our food is coming from. And so it just turns out that one of the pilots who gets sick, his father's the governor of this town. So they're using that as a disguise to kind of sneak onto the planet to kind of figure out what's going on. So Buck, who else went with them?
Well, it's Wilma Deering.
Well, yeah, but what was the name of the guy? The guy that Buck was having issues with.
Yeah, that is...
The man with the fantastic
Major throw. Duke Danton, played by David Groh.
And there was a major who went also.
Major Fields, played by Sheila DeWitt. Mm-hmm. African-American female, looking really good in that outfit. Proud to have her as a fighter pilot. You know, Uhura never got to fucking blow anybody up. So,
true,
props
true
to
that.
Major Fields. Also, take into account, Major Fields outranks Captain Buck Rogers.
True. That's true. Major Fields. And so they go to the planet with the disguise of taking this pilot back home. And they're meeting
his daddy.
To his dad, yeah.
And the daddy's name, by the way, is Governor Soroyan.
Played by?
Roddy McDowell.
National fucking treasure. National fucking treasure.
He's not our nation, though.
Well, he is now, damn it. He's American as far as I'm concerned. I claim him. I claim him for America. And so they come back to the planet. They're there at the planet. And they start kind of figuring out how it works. And it comes up that it's slave labor, you know.
Yeah, and Roddy McDowell doesn't even understand, you know, because they don't really have a concept of slavery in the 25th century. And so Buck has to explain what slavery is and why it's fucked up.
But everyone else at the table seems okay with it.
They don't understand. They don't understand, you know, that it's not something that they comprehend. It's like, okay, you've worked it out so that we get our food. That's great. You know, it's not no skin off our teeth. And it's like, oh, no, we've had some history with slavery on Earth, guys. Yeah. This is not cool. Trust me.
That's where you scream, message!
Oh, yeah, very much screaming message. Yes. But again, another progressive element of this show, and props to it. Right. Because there's some seriously regressive elements of this show as well. So true. That's worth pointing out.
So they're talking about, well, when they find out it's slavery, they're like, well, how do you get them? And they talk about, well, there's this guy named Kali who catches these nomads, and he brings them in, and the nomads are so excited to work for us.
Yeah, they're just simple savages. It's their own people. Their own Khalil is selling them, so it's okay, right?
And who is Khalil played by?
Jack Palance.
Another goddamn national treasure right there.
We do get to claim this one, yes.
Because, Johnny, you're my number one guy. Or Jack, I'm sorry.
One of the things we're going to be doing over the course of the series is we're going to be referencing the book Buck Rogers in the 25th Century, a TV Companion, released in 2015, credited to Patrick Yankovitz. Yankovitz? Every episode they give you some nice tidbits, some nice bits of information. And one of the things they talked about is that Jack Palance, while a great Western actor of the 50s and 60s, had pretty much fallen on hard times by the 1970s. And I mean that pretty literally, because one of the movies he did was Black Cobra, starring Laura Gimser, one of the most beautiful women to ever exist in the world, best known for playing Black Emmanuel in a whole series of movies. Black Cobra is not a Black Emmanuel movie, but it definitely has the requisite nudity. Jack Palance plays a very meek, mild academic who is very into snakes. And he's got like a son or a partner or something that actually uses a snake to kill a woman for no good reason. Gimser had a lesbian relationship with this woman and hates this guy for what happens. So she manipulates things. So she eventually gets this guy who, by the way, was played by the actor who was actually her husband. And at the end of the movie, they shove a giant cobra up his ass and kill him. And you see them actually shoving the cobra up against his ass. Not in, but he has his bare ass as they're killing him with the cobra. And so Jack Palance basically has this kind of walkthrough in the role. He's in, probably half a dozen scenes or so. But because he's the guy who owns the snakes and he's the guy who's the benefactor of the people that are around him, his presence is notable. But the fact that Palance was doing some shitty Euro trash, softcore, porny kind of things shows where his career was. And so Suck Rogers by 1979 was probably a step up from what he had been doing in recent years. But as you mentioned, he was in the Tim Burton Batman movie.
Yeah.
And that made such an impression on people that it reignited his career. And from there, he got
City Slickers.
Yes. And he got to play Curly, and he got to do the push-ups at the Academy Awards. Yep. When he's like 70 some odd years old. And it completely revitalized his career. He worked and worked in a respectable capacity until the end of his life, as I recall.
Well, all I know is he was chewing up the scenery like a madman.
Oh my god. Like the sequences where he's screaming at his people when he's getting ready to bring them
in.
The
awesome cape and
we're gonna get to that in just a minute. He was doing that so hard and so loud he actually lost his voice. So the version we heard on the show was ADR.
Really?
Because he went hoarse and couldn't do it anymore because he was doing it with such conviction. The director talked about how when you bring Jack Palance on, you do not direct him. He's Jack Palance. You just let him be Jack Palance. And he was fucking 100%. 120%. But tell these folks what Jack Palance is wearing.
Elvis Liberace type cape with the...
Was it purple or pink? Or what?
It was like a purple. No, it was purple and he had the infinity stones across his chest.
Right. And he's all in white.
All in white. And he's definitely doing some Elvis moves because he's doing the hands with the cape.
A lot of gestures.
Yeah.
He's loving that cape. Aaron Gray, in some excerpts that they had in the book, is talking about how Palance just fucking loved that cape. Watch him. He's doing all sorts of stuff with it. He's twirling around.
He is.
She felt like there was an 8-year-old trapped in this giant's body.
I remember you said, I hope he does a cartwheel. I was like, waiting.
When he was coming up to the stage before the slaves, you started humming the thing music from... No, you were doing Blues Brothers.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. And we were wanting him to come out and do the cartwheel, but it didn't work out that way. But he up to the cartwheel, he was bringing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so
what else happens in the story, though?
We find out that Khalil is actually building a secret army, and they want to attack the Earth. To lower the defenses of Earth, they've poisoned the pilots.
And one of the reasons why they have to poison the pilots is because they're using these slaves as the pilots, and they're untrained. So they've got to have this master strategist.
The guy with the scar, right?
Galen,
yeah.
Played by Robert Dowdell, who is apparently like the head muckety-muck of military on Earth before he became a mercenary and went rogue and was believed to have been killed, but turns out, no, he's working on the slave planet instead. So they know that they can't beat the Earth defenses on a straight-up fight, even though they've got a lot of ships, but if they make the pilots sick and they have their pilots guided by this one dude who's the only major badass of the bunch, they think they can actually take over the Earth.
And of course, we kind of skipped over the part where Buck was trying to teach him about football.
Well, okay, so there's an immediate competition between Buck and Major Duke Danton. And Danton's played by David Groh, who's mostly played like Goombas over the course of his career.
Oh.
He played a lot of like Mafia Dons and stuff like that, you know, hoods. And so to have this like heavy New York accent and this obviously an Italian dude, you know, walking around in those seriously unforgiving white spacesuits that they have, you know, for the Earth forces in, it's actually kind of, again, it's kind of progressive, kind of neat because those kind of guys don't get to do sci-fi. They didn't get to do it back then. Even more so, I would say they don't get to do it now. Like, when was the last time you saw like a obvious like Italian type dude in like a sci-fi deal? So he's obviously enjoying the opportunity to do something different and be like a badass hero. But he's also got immediate antipathy toward Buck Rogers because they're both these alpha males.
Yes.
And they've both had relations with Aaron Gray's character, Wilma Deering. And so there's this macho competition between the two of them. And initially they do set up the Major as being a total douchebag. But over the course of the episode, you realize he's an all right guy. He's just, you know, doesn't give the best first impression, obviously.
And of course,
and I think he was under a serious strain because all of his pilots are keeling over.
Isn't that when he told him that, that fuck you, what was it, Van Fingle?
Yeah, yeah, you're, what the fuck? It's like Duck and Fangles or something,
yeah.
or Fluke and Dangles.
Recon 1, I appreciate your concern, but I'd appreciate it all the more if next time you'd refrain from interfering in a directorate training mission.
What?
If you call that interfering, there's something wrong with your fucking Wagnalls.
I don't know what you mean by that, but how'd you like to repeat that in the flight hangar?
I'd love to.
It's apparently like some old style dictionary, like a Webster's, but because of the enunciation and the timing, it sounds like he's saying like you're fucking something.
Oh yeah, I thought he said that. I was like, holy
I had to
shit!
Check. The first time I watched the episode, I had to check. Say, what the fuck did he just say?
I was like, damn, Buck is bringing the A game.
Well, and this is the thing too. And Aaron Gray mentions it in the book. She's shocked at how often they get away with shit on the show because they were intentionally pulling shit.
Oh yeah.
Get away with, particularly with Twiki. And she's like, we just kept getting away with it. So she was always.
I'm pretty sure when he's like, biggie, 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 there was a lot of cursing going on there.
Well, again, one of the reasons why we're doing Buck Rogers of all the different sci-fi shows is this show just does not give a fuck. And I really appreciate it's not giving a fuckness, you know?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't take it as... They don't take themselves so
serious. They take none of this seriously. That's such a gas.
There are literally scenes where they look at the camera and I think they're smiling at us. Like a little smirk.
The director was not kind to the acting abilities of Gil Gerard as Buck Rogers. And one thing that he mentions is that oftentimes times you'll be watching the dailies and you'll see the doctors giving you something you hadn't seen while you're actually there shooting. And when you see it on print, it's like, oh yeah, that's really great. That came off so great on film. And what he pointed out with Gerard is that he would be filming him and he would think he would see something while the live performance was being done. And then he'd go back and he'd look at the print. It's like, and he wasn't giving him anything. It's like, it was just this flat performance. It's like, I was seeing something while we were there and then nothing got captured by the camera. So not kind to Gil Gerard, but again, this is a show that so doesn't take itself seriously that you don't get hung up on that shit. It coasts on this lazy dad charm.
Oh, yeah. I guess, yeah, you could say that. I mean, he smirks. He's always saying those really god-awful dad jokes.
Yeah. But the show thinks that Buck Rogers is Han Solo. He's not. He's probably closer to Poe Dameron. But I just enjoy it because I like that he's like big dad. I have a question for you, though. And again, those fucking white suits are unforgiving. Is Gil Gerard fat or is he just like husky? Is he like...
He's husky. He's thick. Okay. He's a big thick, dude. Yeah, he's a big dude.
Because, I mean, I think he's...
As much as you said those white suits are unforgiving, when they put him in those potato suits on the sand,
oh, yeah,
they look like baked potatoes running around. So that was brutal.
We'll mention at one point,
they crash
the major. They're basically the evil general dude has a device that sucks the power out of their spaceships.
The leeching something,
right? And so they crash out the desert, and they're wandering around the desert for a long time, and they're playing like the synth version of Planet of the Apes type music, which is appropriate.
Well, actually, I told you it sounded like the Warriors.
Yeah, and you were digging it. I was digging it.
I'm like, holy shit. I'm waiting for, like, you know, the baseball Furies to come swinging bats or some shit. It was fantastic.
But in order to survive in this desert climate, the pilots have to put on these gold lame suits.
I kept thinking of that song, A Horse With No Name.
Been through the desert on a horse with no name.
Because they kept talking about being in a desert. And I still think one of the best scenes is where they're eating. I don't know why, because apparently they've only been traveling for a small amount of time, but they stopped to have a break. And they don't have any food, so Buck killed something that was in the ground and he's cooking it, and the other guy?
The major
was like, you know, Buck, all them times I called you a savage, I don't take any of them back. And I'm like, dude, it's just... And Buck Rogers just going to town on it, dude. It looked like chicken.
Yeah, he's just some random rodent. Buck is obviously a southerner. He's Buck, for starters. him eating a rodent and just chowing down, it's like, yeah, go for it, buddy. And he totally owns that redneck quality he has, and that's part of what I love about the character.
So the major was definitely a soy boy because he's like, here, have this chicken. I prefer my tablets or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So, the future of the soy boys.
So they get attacked by some ninjas.
One thing I'm going to mention too, though, is again,
they get attacked by ninjas in the desert.
Well, no, they're Tusken Dude, Raiders.
No, those are
those
ninjas.
Are Tusken Raiders,
Dude,
though.
They were throwing ninja weapons.
Okay, they were throwing ninja weapons. Well, and forgot too, at one point they tried to assassinate Buck and his comrades
by pouring acid on the end of a.
It was a space boomerang. Yeah. With acid on it, flying all over the place, lighting shit up, everything. That was a full-on ninja. But these people were like wearing old lady masks. As you mentioned, they look kind of like Taliban because they've got their faces all shrouded in blackness and stuff. I think they're Tusken Raiders, personally, is the most direct thing. But they're also kind of like monkeys. They're kind of jumping around. So they got a whole thing going on there.
Well, I guess it's a
mess of shit.
Like I said, the assassin was kind of funny because every time he's throwing the boomerang there, Buck Rogers is kind of in this crouching position. And I kept thinking, judo chop, judo chop.
Gil Gerard is absolutely the inheritor of William Shatner style bullshit TV judo.
Yeah.
And again, it's one of those
things. Fighting was breathtaking. You know what?
But it's fun though, man. There was one guy whose head goes through a rail, and that was some real shit.
Yeah, we both went,
ooh. I hope he came out of that okay, because that really happened.
John Wick needs to watch this for the John Wick 3 to get some of these kung fu moves down. Some of them great kicks that were just... Did he really kick him? I think at one time I saw him flew back.
I think Gil Gerard did legit have some judo training because he was on the Sidekicks TV show in the 80s.
Was he?
Yeah, remember, he was it Ernie Chan that he was teamed up with?
I don't remember, dude. I never
saw
that.
Yeah, so I think he actually has a little bit of martial arts training, but he's also, it's not like he's...
That's
not Bruce
Hollywood.
Or
it's Hollywood judo.
It's very much Hollywood judo, yes. And not Hollywood TV, late 70s, me generation, leisure suit quality judo.
Judo chop, judo chop. And so they get captured. The slave girl.
I want to mention to you, part of the competition between Buck and the Major is that he's wanting to bring up all of this stuff from the 20th century, like football stuff. And, you know, again, he's a red-blooded American, so he knows all about going after the quarterback and red dogging and all this kind of stuff. And he's in a class with the major, and they're mocking him. And so they eventually end up tackling one another back and forth and just making a whole mess of everything. I just enjoy that sequence, but of course they use it to pay off in the big climactic action scene later in the movie. But we're back on the planet. Wilma's been captured. The slave girl that was helping them has been captured. They're under the power of Khalil. The baked potatoes are running through the desert trying to save Wilma and company. Go.
They find two ships. The major decides he's going to fly back to Earth to get whatever forces are left to come, because they see all these ships on this air. Was it like a port? And they know that they have to get the ships before they get in the air. Buck decides that he's going to go in there and try to get Wilma. He gets captured. They're all thrown into, like, it's, I'm assuming, a sauna?
Yeah, it's basically a space sauna.
Yeah, like a giant space sauna.
Erin Gray made a point of mentioning that she was totally game. She knew that they were using her as a sexual prop. She was fine with that.
Yeah.
The one thing she wasn't fine with is one of the stunt women they had her with had a bigger ass than hers, and she had a nice ass, and she was not going to have her ass besmirched by having it filled in by somebody who was too big. So she did some of her own stunts in that sequence to make sure that she got full ass credit. And then later on in the series, she got somebody with a smaller ass than her, so they actually made her look better than her already very nice ass was. So she was very conscious of her role in these series, and she was game, and I'm happy for that. You always hate hearing these stories where an actress has to do a bunch of sexy type stuff, and she's like, I felt used, I felt exploited, I hated. And Grace, she's like, nah, I knew what I was doing. It was cool.
Yeah. Well, there came a scene that I like I told you while we were watching, I'm sure kids were hurt, where Buck decides he's going to use some kind of grenade he found, put it underneath a helmet, light the grenade, and be launched into the air like a fucking Looney Tune cartoon. Never mind the physics and all that. Scream, this would not happen at all.
There's some nice looking, like, the matte paintings and the set dressing on the show is really nice, but sometimes the special effects just are like, oh, come on. And this was some goofy ass shit, but I loved it.
But so he puts the grenade underneath the helmet, stands on the helmet. At first, I thought he was going to blow a hole. I didn't realize he was going to fucking pull a Bugs Bunny thing and fucking stand on the helmet. The bomb explodes, launches him into the air, which you can see the cables lift him. He lands on a pipe, spins around the pipe, happens to find a hole, crawl through the hole that leads to a storage area to get some rope to rescue the ladies that are still in the sauna. The slave girl then tells him that there's other slaves there that also want to revolt. There's not a lot, but there's enough that, you know, we can do something while you do something in the air.
And including in the background, a young Tim Robbins.
Oh, yeah, Tim Robbins, yeah. I still can't believe that was Tim Robbins, too. So
the lighting gave him a very Cro-Magnon quality. Yeah. But just the height alone, he's a tall dude.
Is
this show's got a lot of tall dudes because Gil Gerard's about 6'2", but then Jack Palance is like 6'4". He was so tall that they're having trouble keeping him in frame for the matte paintings that were filling out some of the sets.
Mm-hmm.
But he worked with them because everybody loved him. They thought he was a total pro. And then you got Tim Robbins, who's 6' something, too. He's like a lot of big dudes in this thing.
Yeah. So Buck and Wilma steal two pirate ships and lead us into the clandestine battle in the sky, I guess, in space.
Dun, 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 dun. And yeah, there's some dumb bullshit. Okay, so Buck and Wilma, and again, a great progressive show. Sometimes Erin Gray is playing it like really too soft when she's hanging out with the Earth Forces and shit. But I noticed that once she was in slave girl mode and she's trying to be like mothering to the slave girl and the sauna and all this kind of stuff, she would have this kind of deeper voice and more like, you know, weary and angry and all this other kind of stuff. And so you could see that she could act the part when she could get away with it. But you could also tell that sometimes she would poof it up and bimbo it up a little bit because that was what was expected of her. So she would like slip in good acting when she could get away with it. But I like that she is actually the one who kicks the asses of the guards of the pilot ship.
Well, he's like, you didn't have to take them both out.
Well, I mean, once I got started, I couldn't stop.
Yeah.
Like, I think I've created a monster here.
Yeah, I was like, oh, wow.
So I like that Buck's got kind of a Steve Trevor. He's like, yeah, you go, girl. You know, I dig that about him.
I know you would.
Yeah. But what bugs me is that they're stealing the enemy spacecraft. They just happen to have a few left over that they couldn't find slaves to man. And so they're coming.
No, remember, there's two pilots down there.
Okay, who didn't take off for some reason, which doesn't make any sense either. But so they're coming up on the rear and see the evil general guy who's controlling everybody. And the only person actually knows how to do all this piloting shit is also in the rear. So you would naturally come up behind him and blow him up from behind.
Wait,
he still thinks that
Wait. That bothers you? Never mind the fact that they had left like an hour or two before they escaped.
Right. There's a lot
of problems. Catch up to them that fast, not only to catch up to them, but surpass them and get behind the Earth Force.
But this is part of what's so stupid.
Physics
they go around the invading crew, and then the Earth Force is made up of whoever's left who
like wants six to get ships. Poisoning. There's like
so six
there's
like
of
ship
them.
Ships, and they're all like retired pilots. See, this is another thing I don't understand.
No, it was it's one like, retired pilot and like okay. a bunch of rookies.
Well, and it's important too because the retired pilot, do you know who that was?
Uh-uh.
That was Buster Crabbe, who played both Buck Rogers and Flash Gordon in the 1930s and 40s
wow.
serials, and they actually call that pilot Gordon. So you can either look at it two ways. It's either two Buck Rogers or the original Flash Gordon and the new Buck Rogers.
Oh,
so
nice.
They have a little team up there. Yeah.
Nice.
And
you just got franked.
Hey, nice double teaming over there. Whoever you are.
Gordon's the name, thanks.
We met Gordon?
I don't think so, Captain. We're from different times.
Gordon, where'd you learn to shoot like that?
I've been doing that sort of thing since before you were born, Captain.
You think so?
Young man, I know so.
But yeah, why is it that, why are these the guys who aren't sick? What I get Buck, because Buck probably has a whole other diet.
I think, I think they mentioned that they spread around the sickness so no one could pinpoint where it came from.
They were trying to conceal why it was, they were specifically targeting the pilots, but they spread it around so that more of the population got sick to cover for that. But they still didn't explain why the pilots that didn't get sick weren't, you know, what was different.
Maybe they were meat eaters. They weren't soy boys. They were meat eaters.
Well, based on Aaron Gray's physique, maybe she only ate like once a week or something.
Well, who knows?
Yeah.
They start battling. Them pirates suck.
Yeah, they were getting... again, they do this whole thing where Buck and Wilma go past the invaders, circle around, prove that they are fellow Earth forces.
By doing what? Answering a question?
Yeah.
Trivia. Asking what trivia?
O.J. Simpson reference.
Yes. Who's the juice?
Yeah, who's the juice? The juice is loose. And so then they have to break through the ranks that they were already coming up behind so they could go after Galen and kill him. Pay off the whole red dogging football scenario they did earlier, but they were already behind him. Just shoot him from behind. It just didn't make any sense. It's one of those things.
Are you arguing that no sense was made in this show?
But I mean, that's something any asshole could do.
Is that what you're going to nitpick?
That is what I'm going to nitpick.
Is that your linchpin for the show?
That's my problem. Yes.
Oh my God, dude.
So, okay. So what did we think of this episode? This is the first episode of Buck Rogers we've watched in a long time too, because we're doing the show out of order.
Yeah, it's fun. I enjoyed it. It took us a really long time to get to that fucking episode.
Well, and again, see, the idea was we would cover an episode of Buck Rogers in 25 minutes or less.
Where are we at?
But the fact is, we're at 28 minutes right now. But here's the thing. My big thing is I don't like shows that take as long as the thing that they're reviewing to discuss.
Yeah. And this was two episodes.
We're basically watching a 90-minute movie. So if we can cover a 90-minute movie in about 30, 35 minutes, I think that's a reasonable thing. And we're still less than 25 minutes per episode. So
we can
cheat a little bit, I think.
I won't lie. I'm a little excited to watch the rest of the season.
I'm totally excited because I think you're going to dig a lot of these.
Yeah.
Especially, these outfits are fucking...
I just love looking at the tech, and I'm like, oh, that's a telephone. That was a push-down telephone.
Right.
That was this. Like, oh, that's a blender.
Well, you were talking about how you were enjoying the show because it reminded you of Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
You were a fan of Battlestar Galactica. I was not, so I didn't watch a lot of that stuff.
Well, Battlestar took itself more serious. You had the Cylons and shit, and it was this war going on. The 13 tribes are traveling, and I mean, that was really cool, where this is just fun. You don't have to put too much into it.
But
Twiggy's cursing a storm.
Right. But I think there's something to that, because the fact is, this is a Glenn A. Larson production. Obviously, Battlestar Galactica was intended as a ripoff of Star Wars. It was created as a TV show to rip off Star Wars. It failed.
Whoa, no. I would say more Flash Gordon, because Flash Gordon was from Earth going to an alien planet. You have Buck Rogers coming from Earth.
But do you think that Battlestar Galactica got on network television in 1978 because of Flash fucking Gordon, or because...
Did you say Battlestar Galactica just now?
I'm talking about Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Battlestar Galactica is absolutely a copy of Star Wars.
Yeah.
Rogers, I would feel, is more of a copy.
Right, that's what I was talking about. Battlestar Galactica failed because it didn't get enough viewers and it cost too much money.
Well, dude, did you see the later episodes?
Bear with me, though. Well. So what happened was, my understanding, I have to read up a little bit more on it. My understanding was that they were setting up Buck Rogers while they were winding down Battlestar Galactica. It was the same production company, and they recycled a bunch of the props and sets from one show to the other. So when you're talking about it reminding you of Battlestar Galactica, probably because
I did not realize
that. Yeah.
Huh.
But I think that probably Buck Rogers was a response to the failure of Battlestar Galactica. They tried to do too serious, too much sci-fi.
Very dramatic.
So this was basically trying to reach out to the more average audience. Earlier this evening, you were talking about your special friend who was talking to you about TV shows from the 70s and early 80s, and Heart to Heart and Remington Steel, and a lot of stuff like that you didn't watch. I grew up on that shit because my grandmother would watch, and I'd watch that stuff with her. Saturday nights were for Love Boat and Fantasy Island. And so I think that Buck Rogers was outreach to the more mainstream audiences when Battlestar Galactica tried for a firmer sci-fi audience, going after the Star Trek and Star Wars people, and failing that, they realized, okay, well, let's try something that'll have a broader appeal.
Yeah, okay.
Earth Directorate sends salutations to the 108th Sage, Andrew Leyland, and Michael Aysen, who both sent us the excited gold female Twiki gift, Booty Booty Booty, Anime Friends, Anime Nostalgia, Dr. Ange, the Autumnal Sphinx Magoo, Make Man Says, hashtag Bernie2020, Bob Buster, Brian Gooney, who sent us a Wilma Deering credit sequence gift, Chris at Bad Books for Beginners, Chris Thompson at Malta Comic Con, Coffee and Comics Podcast, Daniel French for Sponius Sound Design, Dave's Comic Heroes Blog, Dr. G Nerdologist, Dr. Pop Culture BGSU, El Romero Romero, Fanholes Podcast, Gregory Litchfield, Watam Shioran, The Hammer Strikes, Random Geeky Stuff, Helmuth Brickisack, History of Comics on Film, Paul Hick, Into the Weird, Iowa's Joe Crawford, Jeffrey Brown, Joshua Ox, Just in Time with J&T Baggers, Keith G. Baker, Kevin Dodgy, Kiss Me Deadly Dinosaur Dell, Kyle Benning Likes Comics, Lizanne Oswald, Longbox Crusade, Longbox of Darkness, Luke Giaconetti, November is War Comics Month, Max Traver, Mike Siebert, Radio Podcast, at Jet City Comic Show, Not Very Spicy Shrimp, Odell Abner Dracula, who sent us an animated Moses gift, I think from Prince of Egypt, I don't know my Disney, is it Disney? Paul Matthew Carr, Professor Frenzy, Randomitable, Randy Caldwell, Ranger Gord, Resurrections and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast, Richard Field, Richard G., Ryan Daly, Scott Rowland, Secret Wars and Beyond Podcast, Siskoid, Slangward Resist, Slangward Scott, Stimbot 5000, Thomas E. Frey, TXX 1337, Tim Price Podcrasher, Trekonomics Trekbot, Tuck, Van Z, and Warlord World. Sean McLaughlin wrote, I saw it at the theater, and all I remember is Pamela Hensley. She made my little heart flutter and stuff. Patrick R. Carey queried, heart? Sean replied, and stuff. Longbox of Darkness wrote, even if I should somehow go deaf, there's nothing that's going to stop me from listening to this. Chris Thompson wrote, shouldn't that be Aaron Grang audiences? 188 Sage wrote, I know I wish I was Aaron Grang right now. Tuck wrote, Mongolian opulence gets you a follow. Randy Caldwell wrote, I went to the Aaron Grang panel at last year's Baltimore Comic Con. I learned some disappointing but sadly predictable stuff about Hollywood. Slagward Scott wrote, I was delighted to meet Aaron Grang about 15 years ago. So nice. Odell Abner Dracula wrote, Mongolian opulence has an appealing cadence. It sounds like either a decent Devo cover band or a very fancy dinner buffet. Illegal Machine wrote, 100% sounds like a buffet in Branson. Ryan Daly wrote, I'm so ordering the Mongolian opulence next time I get Chinese. And finally, DeBase added, this was must-see TV for Young D in kindergarten. Yes, I'm old. Even now, watching it on Blu-ray, it still has a goofy charm that I enjoy. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts on it. And I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts. If anybody would like to join us for an episode of Buck Fucking Rogers, please chime in. And until then, keep looking to the 25th century.